Hi, this is Jean-Jacques Taylor, and you're listening to Jot Talk. This is a podcast where I talk about the Cowboys, the team I've covered as a beat writer, columnist, TV insider, and radio host for 28 years. I'll also talk about the NFL and the things I love, working out, streaming, food, and all things Dallas. My boy Big Joe and the Big Rig, one of my oldest friends, produces the show and occasionally chimes in with his thoughts on the Cowboys. After all, he's a lifelong Cowboys fan, and he played high school, college, and semi-pro football. Welcome to Jot Talk, where sports is fluid. What's true today might not be true an hour, a day, or a month from now. I'm going to give you the truth straight. No chaser. Glad to have you aboard. Let's get it. Welcome to episode 116 of Jacques Talk. Glad to have you. I'm Jean-Jacques Taylor, joined by my boy Big Joe and the Big Rig. What's up, dog? What's the sit rep?
We are 49 seconds in. We are 5x5, and Operation Jacques Talk is a go.
That, my friends, music to my ears. Episode 16 brings to mind number 16. Who else could it be, dog, other than Damon Hodge?
Steve Pelor.
Okay, I mean, I guess he had a little better career. Damon Hodge was my boy. Played it where? Alabama State. Content Dave's half of alma mammy. He spent 2 years in the black and gold. Damon Hodge, I think he was a practice squad receiver. Had a cup of coffee. I think he played a season, maybe played a few games. But he was my boy. I told y'all, the practice squad guys and players 47 through 53 do what, Joe? They are in the same meetings as Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, and Michael Irvin. They know the same thing and the same information. And if you hang out with the guys at the bottom of the roster, legitimately, authentically get to know them, you too can be in the know. And for a long time, Damon, this is more than you ever wanted to know about Damon Hodge.
Roger that.
He managed a 24-hour fitness that I ended up working out at all times. So we got to be even better friends after playing football. Now he's a coach at one of them Irving high schools, doing well as a basketball coach. So anyway, that's number 16. Joe is shaking his head talking about Damon Hodge. What the F? But hey, sometimes it be like that. Let's give Clarence E. Hill Jr., a phone call. He mad at me because we ain't talked to him in the last few weeks. I was trying to explain to him that the basketball schedule has changed our schedule, and it's the off season. So I try to give the boys a little bit of time off because there ain't that much Cowboys news anyway. But anyway, let's give Clarence Hill Jr. a call. I'm going partying with him tonight, and so we will see what he has to say about that on this sad, sad Thursday morning.
Hello.
Hello, old friend. How are you?
It's been a long time, man. I thought y'all forgot about little old Clarence Hill, man. Y'all want to hang with old Eddie Kang no more. You can't hang with old Eddie Kang no more, man.
No. I've been looking at your Facebook. I can't hang with you. You are everywhere. Everywhere enjoying life as an empty nester. You were at the NBA Finals last night. With that sad story about the Mavericks. Before we get into the Mavericks, because you cop attitude if we let you go without talking about the Mavericks. And before we ask you a couple questions about the Cowboys, legendary high school basketball coach Robert Hughes died yesterday in Fort Worth at 96. That seemed to have had a profound effect on you. What kind of relationship did you have with Coach Hughes?
You know, as I always joke and tell people, Robert Hughes told me I got demoted to the Cowboys from Dunbar. You know, I'm covering Dunbar athletics. But, man, you know, I knew of Robert Hughes, and he's just such a legend, such an icon, you know, and he ruled with an iron fist, but he had a heart for his kids. He was a disciplinarian. And, you know, obviously, just knowing his history, where he came from, starring at TSU and going to the Celtics, been drafted by the Celtics, having his career cut short because he tore his ACL, rookie training camp, going to the Army, and just the typical Robert Hughes fashion. He was called in 1958 by his high school coach and said, "Hey, I want you to coach high school basketball." And Robert Hughes said, "Look, I'm an airline mechanic, okay? I need to be in a big city, and I need to be head coach because I ain't assisting nobody."
That sounds like Coach Hughes.
Okay, I ain't assisting nobody. Well, I'm going to stay and be an airline mechanic. and they gave him a job at the
which is a good job at
I.M. Terrell in Fort Worth, and you know the rest is history. He won three titles in the PBIL, and then went on when they integrated. He went on to Dunbar, and you know, took them to state championships. I think 17 state trips to the state championships, and a couple of more titles, and you know, became the all time winningest coach in basketball history, and named to the Naismith Hall of Fame. But it wasn't just about on the court, you know. Certainly, and there are so many legendary stories about the racism he faced playing the Dallas schools and everything else. And you know, back in the day, that run and gun style, you know, because the white coaches like to walk it up and control everything and play the shot clock. You know, it was, you know, this was kind of inward ball. You know, that fast break that everybody likes. You know, that wasn't, you know, you weren't coaching, you just wrote about it. The players running, he kind of changed the game with his athletes, the full court press, and been, you know, became the Dunbar Flying Wildcats. But the thing about it is when he ruled with the iron fist, he also had a heart for his kids. You know, when he taught them professionalism, he taught them accountability, he taught them things about life, but turned them into men, not just for his basketball team, but, you know, every, you know, you talk to people, he taught health classes, and, you know, one time he had to coach the volleyball team, freshman volleyball team, and coach them to a district championship. But, you know, there was a time, you know, he's just top six, you know, in the heart of the gang infested area of Fort Worth. And some gang members came to his gym, and he ran them out the gym and told them, the head guy come over and talk. It's almost like a movie. He come and talk to them and said, leave my players alone. You know, you go back to those legendary Hollywood movies about that Coach Carter. He did that. That's what he lived. I mean, he protected his kids, and he, you know, got kids into college and everything like that. So, and again, great relationships with you know, and he hazed young reporters, talked trash, you know, with difficulty. He made you learn how to, you know, get along with a coach and everything else. But yeah, it was, you know, I woke up on Wednesday morning, you know, and I saw the headlines, you know, on Jerry West, and I got a phone call. Actually, I got a phone call from Congressman Mark Vesey, who was the first person to tell me, hey, Coach Hughes is gone. And so I just got on the phone, called his son, called people, and I, you know, certainly I put that out there for the world. And I'm glad I was able to do that. But, yeah, it was, you know, we lost two legends, and you add in Bill Walton. That's three basketball legends in threes. You know, stuff like that comes in threes. Three basketball legends over the last couple of weeks.
I was even more – I was surprised by two things I read. One is that I didn't realize his assistant coach, Leondis Rambo, had died earlier this week.
Yeah, he died earlier.
And then that was the only assistant that he had.
Ever had.
That's what I mean. Like, who has that?
And one assistant. I mean, me and Rambo. That's how we do it. You got to get Rambo was good cop, bad cop. Rambo was a good cop. He was the bad cop.
Yeah, so, you know, I didn't really have that many interactions with Coach Hughes, in part. I only covered high schools for a couple years, and then obviously I was focused mostly on Dallas. But I do remember, I think I was part of one of those runs they made where I ended up following them. Jeremy Smith was on that team, whatever year that was.
That's the last title. That's the year they beat Kendrick Perkins and Beaumont Oza. And I talked to Kendrick Perkins last night about Dunbar and that. But that was the last title. And one thing about Dunbar, you know, he does a lot of great sports programs. Dunbar was a nationally known program at DFW for a long time because of Hughes and because of the basketball team. No, you can talk about all the successes, but the only one that was nationally known was Dunbar Flying Wildcats, because Coach Hughes, and certainly, you know, being the Naismith Hall of Famer, there's no other high school coach outside of Lita Andrews, so no other male coach in football, whatever, that's in the Hall, National Hall of Fame, but Bob Hughes. And he's, again, ended as an all-time winningest coach in high school basketball history.
I don't know what else you can add after that.
I didn't know he was an airline mechanic. I'm gonna tell you what's the trip when you said that. ODY, Dunbar, those schools have a program that those kids learn about aircraft.
That's awesome.
He probably started that.
I don't know, because that was back in the 50s. That was when he was at the all-black school. And I'm just saying, before
the integration. It was weird. I didn't realize, you know what I'm saying? I'm kind of tying the two together because for them to have like an airline program or whatever, they learn how to do the aircraft. It's something to do with aircraft, and that's like an odd choice. Right. And just knowing the fact that he was an airline mechanic, he probably started that.
Yeah. That's all. Again, great man on and off the court, and he lived a long time. 96 years old. You know, both my parents died at 86. I wish they could live to 96. You know, I still miss him to this day. But living to 96 years old, certainly the last couple of years have not been his best because of dementia and all that other stuff. But he, you know, this guy was a stalwart of a man, a mountain of a man. He called himself the mayor of Stop Six. He was the ogre of Stop Six. So again, the way he scared you to death. You know, I talked to Oliver Miller. He said, man, put fear in you. Oliver Miller called me from Old Southwest. You know, he said, man, put fear in you. The only coach, he never beat Dunbar, okay? He played the pros, never beat Dunbar, okay? In his high school career, never beat Hughes. But just a big, again, mountain of a man. And he fought all the way to the end, talking to his son. So, again, RIP, condolences to the Dunbar family, and certainly the Hughes family.
As we move on to your Dallas Cowboys, before we talk a little bit about basketball, do you expect anything to get done between now and the start of training camp with any of their, primarily CeeDee Lamb or Dak Prescott?
I think they're trying to work on CeeDee. They certainly, you know, the Jeremy's waiting some leaves to fall with a damn oak tree fell, okay, with that John, that Jefferson contract. You know, they did not. No one expected 35 a year, and so that's.
This goes to the heart of my point, dog. All the daggone time, you sit around, you let everybody else sit the market. You go, oh my God, I can't believe they paid that much. What are we gonna do now? Why don't y'all be proactive for once in your fucking lives and try to get a deal done before everybody else sets the market?
Welcome to my world, Clarence. I ain't gonna never hear it that octave again when he start out screaming.
Please don't hear that. I hear you, and you're parroting a party line, a narrative that a lot of people have spoken. But I just want you to do this. Understand this. It takes two to tango, and all this understanding. They could have got it done early. Do you think the CD wanted to get it done early?
This is all my point. Let me finish. Well,
now.
Hold tight. Now you asked the question. Now let me answer it. You said, "Do you think?" And that's a question. Now let me answer the question, and then Mr. Defense Attorney, you can then come back with another cross-examined question. Okay. I understand that. Does CeeDee want to get it done? No, CeeDee wants to see where does the market go. The way you solve that problem is instead of giving a bullshit offer where it's like, you know what it's going to take to get it done in general. Instead of I'm just using fake numbers now. If you think 32, well, he might want to get 32 because that would make him the highest. We know just Jefferson's out there. If we think 32 will get it done, let's get it at 32.9 or 33.1, and let's overpay it, and maybe that will convince him to do it or at least start the conversation. But the Cowboys like to go, if we think 30 will get it done, let's come in at 28.5 and see if we can do it that way. So all I'm saying is if you want to do and you want to set the market, give him a legitimate, make you think about it offer, and then you can start a conversation.
Okay. Last spring, when they first could have negotiated this deal, the market was 28 million. The highest receiver was $28 million. It was really a BS deal because Tyreek Hill's BS deal because all the money's in the back end of the deal. He's never going to see that $45 million fall in.
One of them Zeke contracts.
Yeah. Well, no, Zeke got real money. Zeke saw all
of
his
money. The last 2 years of 15, whatever they were. Was
yeah, but
money.
He
the first
he got,
few
he got
years
all,
was real
yeah,
money.
Yeah, he got real money, but But even at the beginning of his contract, he was the highest paid, and it wasn't no. But anyway, the bottom line is, it's just like the Dak thing, you know, years ago when they could have signed. I mean, Dak was waiting. Dak has a smart agent. They work for CEA. They know where they talk to other agents. Okay, they know what the other guy's looking for. The other guy's turning down. They, you know, a sly like a fox waiting in the wings for that market to jump. You know, and so. you know, once they didn't get it done, they were waiting. They were they knew what Jefferson had already turned down, because Jefferson, you know, turned down $30 million last year. You know, and no one saw a receiver getting more than, you know, anybody outside of a quarterback. I don't think this year, no one saw $35 million coming. But I know this whole year it's been about waiting. They haven't had any real negotiations. They still haven't really ramped up negotiations, at least as of last week when I checked in, because everybody thought once Jefferson signed, they're going to intensify negotiations. They weren't intensified, you know. And, you know, so, you know, we'll see. But I do think that that's the one that has a chance to get done before training camp. Certainly they would like to get Dak done. I think Parsons even ready to acknowledge it. He talked to the other day, man, I'm waiting. I ain't in no rush. He already knows whenever he signed, he'll be the highest paid non-quarterback, okay? I'm waiting for all these deals to get done. I had no problem waiting until next year, because he's just in his fourth year. He got the Cowboys, got control for two more years. He had no problem waiting till next year, because he said that all it's going to do is the market's going to jump and jump and jump. You know, so he might get $40 million. Right. You know,
which is, you know, why...
And there's nothing the Cowboys can do about it. They're not going to sign. First of all, the problem financially right now, and that's the other thing, is that say you want to blow Michael Parsons out the water with $40 million. Well, you still got to sign Dak and CD, and they are the priorities because they're up, and they will be free agents first. And so you can't get ahead of the curve with Michael right now because you got to sign Dak and CD. You know, their problem to me when they signed Dak to that 4-year deal in 2021. They knew what the number was going to be in the last year of the deal. The plan all along was to sign into a long-term extension before this year. And they, right, you know, again, the market jumped again. You know, right now, that can basically, you know, you say, you know, highest paid player is $55 million. But, you know, you got to understand that you tag Dak, you know, his market, because he's already been tagged. You know, his potential market is $60 million a year. Now, again, we've talked earlier, you know, say Dak don't get 60, but baseline for anything is 52. And you know, highest paid player is 55. So, you know, and you know he ain't signed no more than 4 years. It's straight money. So you can't – a lot of these guys are signing 6- and 7-year deals, 6-year deals, because they got the old rookie contract on top of it. Dak is getting all of his right now, just like he did last time. That's why he has the best deal, have a chance – had the best deal of anybody, whatever he signs. You look at the last two contracts.
Yeah. I don't disagree with any of that. I'm just saying, when you sit around and wait every time, you can start negotiations. You don't have to wait. I mean, it's no different than if you see, if you're a dude and it's no different if you see somebody you want to holler at. You can wait for them to make a move, or you can say, hey, would you like to go out for coffee? No, thank you. Hey, how about then 3 days later? How about lunch? No, thank you. Hey, I'm going over here. I mean, you can be proactive and try to get a deal done.
The funny part is the guys that they signed early have backfired. They signed, what's the left tackle? I'm just anecdotal. You know, they signed the right tackle last year, right? You know, I can't even think of the line. What's the linebacker from Notre Dame?
Jalen Smith.
They signed Jalen Smith early, thinking, okay, let's go get ahead of Jalen Smith. Backfire.
That's fine. You know, my conversation with all of those things.
Get ahead of Lyle Collins. Backfire. They just signed their right tackle last year in the training camp. He had the worst season of his career.
Well, he's coming off a very severe knee
injury. They signed him to big money. Coming off an injury because they wanted to get ahead of it. They signed Michael Gallup trying to get ahead of it. And it's going to be Michael. We're going to protect Michael Gallup. He's going to be this. And he's going to be able to replace Amari Cooper. We're going to sign him to this deal.
Damn, there's a pattern there. They signed him. They signed him cash early coming off injury. Yeah.
There's a pattern. And why are they doing that? Because they're trying to get over.
Yeah,
that's why they're doing that.
And that's
their whole problem is they try to win every deal. Some deals you're not going to win. When you walk into the Bentley dealership, you're not winning.
Are you going to
Bentley is winning.
Are you going to holler the whole show?
If I feel like it.
All right, then.
With that high pitched voice.
Yeah.
Hey, some people say I don't have enough passion.
Who the hell said that?
But so anyway,
Clarence Hill Jr. brings the passion up.
Like I said, it's what they're dealing with. But at the end of the day, we all believe that CD will be there. Dak's going to be there. And the Cowboys are going to be competitive and have a chance to make the playoffs this year, and then we'll see what they get done. But this is an interesting offseason because, you know, we were asking, you know, we have not talked to minicamp, so we talked to Dak and talked to Micah, and, you know, and we bring up Dak's contract, and I think you, it's fairly in light of a guy like Aaron Rodgers who's not at camp. But, you know, Mike McCarthy said, you know, Dak is basically a model for everybody. Because you're talking about an offseason where the coaches are all on one-year deals. Players, are, you know, there's like 27, 28 players who are on one-year deals whose contracts are up after this year, including Dak and CD. You know, this is, you know, everything is, you know, there's urgency all around, okay? There's no safety net for the coaching staff. Every coaching staff is on a one-year contract. You know, so everything is about this year. You know, and so there's a lot of uncertainty. There's an unknown future, and Dak Prescott has been there every day. And Mike McCarthy has had his best offseason, was his future on the line as well. You know, and that's how everybody should focus. You know, it's all about now, take care of business and do your thing. You know, and you know, Dak talking, hey, man, I told Mike he should be here. You know, I'm going to be a leader. He should be a leader. He should be here. Now I trust he's going to be in shape, and we love him. And you know, but he's told his people, and you know, he's certainly doing the right things, and we're gonna see how this thing turns out. But you know, he's been, you know, a model for everybody on how to approach this situation and put everything, be your best, as Jason Garrett said, regardless of circumstance, and put all your chips in for the season. You know, whether the ownership has done that with how they built the roster. You know, Dak has not let it affect his approach.
How do you feel about this team going into the season? Now, normally I don't, you know, this is about the time where I started looking at them, because now this is kind of like who your team. It's rare that you're going to add a difference maker from here on out during the season. Maybe you add somebody to trade deadline, but it's rare that you're going to add a difference maker between now and the start of training camp and the start of the season. How do you view this team? You view it as a 12-5 team? You view it as a 10-7 team? You view it as a, I don't know, 6-11 team?
Well, hey, you know, the schedule is tough. Schedule is much tougher. But I do think this team has a chance to win 10 or 11 games and get to the playoffs. Again, as I, you know, especially looking at the division, and I know a lot of teams have made a lot of moves and we're excited about what the Eagles have done. No team has repeated this division since 2004. You know, I don't care what they've done, you know, coming off a great year the year before with the Cowboys and Eagles, they flip-flopped the last 3 years, and everybody thought, well, Cowboys going to repeat because they got everybody back, and, you know, and the Eagles, somebody won. I mean, or whatever else. And so you don't know. But they still have the best quarterback in the division, right? They still have the best receiving division on paper. Their two guard tandem between Zach Martin and Tyler Smith is the best guard tandem in the league. So you have questions with the rookie left tackle. Still have the best pass rush in the division. They have best cornerback tandem in the division. They have a solid core safety. They've improved their linebacker core. They're built to compete and continue to win in this division. You know, the question with the Cowboys in the last couple of years is what they're going to do in the playoffs. You know, how can they take it to the next level in the playoffs? They've done nothing on paper from a roster standpoint to take it to the next level. You know, hopefully they believe that the addition of Zimmer and his defensive scheme will be the difference. And we'll see. But, you know, for the Cowboys, it's all about what you're going to do in the playoffs. That's for all of them. But it's funny. You know, you saw Mike Tomlin just got his extension. He got a 3-year extension.
Right.
Matt McCarthy taking his team to 12-5, 12-5, 12-5. Early playoff exits. He can take his team to another 10-11 win season, make the playoffs. Early playoff exits, he's probably gone.
Well, I mean, you know, the Steelers are the anomaly. They don't fire nobody. Right. But now that being said, I will be happy to be proved wrong. But this looks to me like a 7 or 8 win team.
What? What? What?
I don't think they hit 500 this year.
What?
And that's because I think the foes that they play outside of the division are a lot more traditionally difficult. I mean, I know the schedule changes every year, teams are this or that, but I expect Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Baltimore to all be good this year. Better than Dallas.
You know, coming up,
I think San Francisco and Detroit.
I hadn't taken a pause yet.
You gotta wait for me to finish my statement.
Let me, you know, Cooper Rush beat Cincinnati right here coming off the Super Bowl. Okay, I just wanted to know that, right?
Okay,
I just wanted to know
that. And I once slept with a 10.
No, you didn't.
You know, that was an anomaly. Yes, I did.
That's a lie. It's a lie.
And that was an anomaly.
Joe.
And so anomalies happen.
Hey, listen.
Joe, Cap.
You don't know every woman I've been with.
Cap.
Yeah, he always got to go there, man. Stop playing.
Cap.
Quit playing,
Cap.
Man.
I do think the Browns game is a litmus test, but if they beat the Browns, I'll give them a loss to Ray. But they beat the Browns week one, look out.
Yeah,
you know,
it's uphill.
You got the Falcons. You got it's funny. We're blowing the Texans, but Texans ain't never won nothing. They've not done nothing. They haven't had no expectations. Everybody's like, Texans can be better than we'll see. They've never had any
expectations. The Texans.
I know. A lot of people know the best team in Texas. You got the Commanders with a rookie quarterback. You got the Panthers.
I said I'd be happy to be proved wrong, but they ain't got no running game. They're one injury away at receiver.
They had no running game last year.
Yeah.
By those same words.
I think Tony Pollard is better than anybody they got right now. I'd be happy to be proved wrong.
Tony Pollard had
I'd be happy to be proved wrong.
Burst, he had no burst last year. And
right, and he's still better than anybody they got this year. Is he not better than Rico Dowdle?
I don't know. Last year, Tony Pollard, I don't know, because he had no burst.
And even if you like Rico Dowdle, Rico Dowdle is literally hurt all the time.
The great Buckeye is back. They're going to be better running.
Nobody
blocks.
Is a bigger fan of Zeke. Zeke is...
They'll be better.
Statistically, is just a guy.
They'll be better run blockers.
He's just a guy.
Be better run blockers this year.
Okay, we got to... I mean, I don't trust the tackle, so we'll see. I'm happy to be proved wrong. I really am. But they look like a 7-8 win team.
Seven wins is low. Joe, what you think about 7 wins, though? Joe?
Nah, it's low. It's low.
I mean, come on. Seven wins.
I said 7 or 8. Maybe they get to 8.
7-8 or low. That's still a losing record. Dak has not had a losing record since he showed up. I don't see him being below 500.
I don't see it. It's too easy to be above 500 in this league right now. It's too easy to get to 10 games.
Depends on who you are. So I'm happy to be proved wrong.
For the Cowboy.
You don't think they still own the Giants?
You said 10-7 earlier this year. You know, in the earlier show, you said 10-7.
Did he say 10-7? He dropped a couple of games. He said 7-8.
I thought 10-7 was a bad year for them. I don't see seven wins. That's ridiculous. A lot of stuff got to go wrong. Yeah. That's what he's saying is the stuff go wrong.
Yeah.
When y'all talking about no running game. Mike McCarthy don't want to run the ball anyway.
Well, it doesn't matter. He didn't want to run the ball the year Tony Pollard had a good year.
That's what I'm saying. He didn't.
If you have running backs, you can do some things. I just don't think. I think they have so many questions that are unanswered to me that they're not all going to be answered positively, and it doesn't take much when you have everybody on edge because they're on 1-year deals. It doesn't take much for the ship to go awry, And that's part of my thinking, is I just think at some point they'll run into some adversity and the ship will go awry. And because everybody's out saving their own ass, because everybody's in the situation that Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones have put them in, it will be hard for them to recapture things and get it straightened. So I think it's a lot of stuff off the field, a lot of stuff on the field that will lead to a disappointing season. Now, I am happy to be proved wrong. I got no problem with that. And then I can go on and say, oh, okay, I was wrong. Good for them.
Or you can say, you can say sports is fluid, huh?
Yeah, that's what he's going to say. I can say I'm okay to stay in my mind.
I know some of y'all who thought the Mavericks was going to win the series.
Okay.
And now you don't think they're going to win the series because why? You got some new information, and so you changed your mind.
There's nothing new.
It is new. I don't think anybody thought the Mavericks was going to be down 3-0.
I said if Jason Tatum come through, it's going to be uphill for the Mavericks. Somebody called me grandiose. Yeah, you use that. Boy, you going to make me pull tape.
Go find it on the tape.
I will
go,
have it.
You always say that, but you never pull it.
Because you don't want
it. You always say that, but you never pull it.
You don't want
it.
It's your show. You don't want
it. I said delusions of grandeur, but I don't say grandiose. That's not in my vernacular.
Oh, my God. That is... Boy, grandiose, delusions of grandeur.
Hit that thesaurus again, because you jacked up obtuse the other day. Stop playing.
As many words as I use, I'm about to mess up one or two of them. If I use the same 10 every week, I might not mess up none of them.
Maybe you need to be more simple.
Since we have moved to the Mavericks, you know, let's move to the Mavericks.
Roger that.
I'll be the conductor on this particular episode. Since we're ready to move to the Mavericks, let's move to the Mavericks. What is your take on Luka?
I mean, he's getting obliterated nasty right now.
I said, what is your take on Luka?
You know, I think he's played well. You know, certainly he was the only one that showed up the first two games. You know, it's funny. He was the only man that showed up the first two games, really. He got no help in Boston. You know, but, you know, in pivotal game three, you know, and we've said it. We've talked about it. His demeanor, his on-court demeanor, is something that just rubs a lot of people wrong. And at some points, it hurts the team. I mean, he's complaining when the other team is running down the court. You're not getting back with your teammates, and the game is too important. Every possession is too important, especially in the postseason and the finals. And you can't do that, and you have to be smarter. Certainly, his physical condition has to be better. I love his strength and the pace he plays with, but he has been a turnstile on defense, you know. But to me, the bigger problem for the Mavericks is that the others have not showed up. You know, Luka and Kyrie have done, you know, the P.J. Washingtons, Derrick Jones even played last night, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr., Maxi Kleber, they're getting nothing from the others, nothing at all. And if four to six best players on the court or five of the seven best players on the court every night are wearing green, you know, and their others are showing up, and, they, you know, it's always Brown and Tatum and somebody else, you know, and they got four or five in double figures, and they're hitting their shots and everything else, and the Mavericks can do nothing with it. And everything that Luka and Kyrie get, they're tough. They have to make miracle impossible shots. Because, and then when they throw it out to the teammates for open looks, they're missing them. But Luka and Kyrie is getting D'd up, and the things that he does is making, you know, he has to make blocking shots. The Boston really good defense. They're not helping. They're playing a one-on-one, you know, and they're just making it tough for him. So, yeah, Luka's getting a lot of the negative attention, but it's really the others who haven't showed up that's been the difference.
You know, Joe made a terrific point the other day, which is that one of the reasons Luka has looked the way Luka has looked, especially defensively the last couple games, is what you just talked about. He got to do it all on offense. He ain't really got nothing left on defense. In the earlier series, they were getting contributions, whether it was from Kyrie or whether it was from other guys. And so he could do what? He could rest on offense because he ain't had to carry that load. And then that made him more active on defense. It didn't make him a great defensive player, didn't, might not even made him a good one, but it made him an average one. And on certain possessions, he could really dial it up for this one or two possessions and do a good job. And without that offensive help, man, I mean, if you think about before he fouled out, how many of those short jumpers he left at the front of the rim, I think he missed two or three of them.
Right.
To me, it was clearly just fatigue. Like, I don't have my legs, and I'm doing everything I can. I used your favorite line this morning at the gym when I was talking about it with the fellas, which is same thing, make you laugh, make you cry. Same thing, the passion, the intensity, the this, the that, that creates one of the best players in the world is the same thing to get on your nerves sometimes. And he got to harness it. And it made me think about, because he is getting eviscerated today, which I think is, this is what I think about it. It seems like that typical over-the-top faux anger that we get from journalists. Like, they don't just, like, they mad. Like, why is Brian Windhorst so mad? Like, did he take some money out your pocket? Like, why are you so mad, so angry about it? To the point where you basically call him a loser.
Oh, man.
You know, because he's... I mean, that's what he said. He said the Celtics, yeah, the lose, like, and that's the stuff that I contend in general. Reporters would never say to another player's face. They say it on TV, but would you say it with the same intensity and the same attitude and the same demeanor? If even if you was just in a press conference, would you say it like that? No.
You're right. Go ahead. Let me, you know, interject. You know, it's a funny thing because I remember the same comments last night, and I even go back to, you know, I love Tim Calasau in the NHL Finals, and when he questioned the effort of the team. I mean, this team has battled back from the stars battled back from 0-2 deficit in the first series. You know,
they were Las Vegas.
And so they've shown heart, they've shown fight, they've shown toughness. Now we get to the finals, they lose to a better team, and we're questioning their heart and toughness. I just have a problem with that. And so we
say that again, bro, because it's okay to say sometimes other team is better, or it's such a bad matchup for you, it exposes all your flaws.
Yeah, but now we question their character and fight, and that's the same thing about these in the NBA. You can play well and play well for three series, but you go to the finals and don't do something, and everybody's like, oh, he sucks. You know, it's like, what? I mean, that's how we do KD. That's what we do. I mean, I don't care what you've done all season, you know, and the certain thing we do with Dak and everything else, but we forget everything you've done and what you've done, the great shot Luka made against Minnesota, all the stuff you've done to carry Maverick here. Now he's a loser. You know, and it is crazy, but that is what it's become. You know, now he's a freaking loser. You know, and now that they're memes, they got memes now on Facebook and Twitter of Luka turning into Dak. I don't know if you've seen that. You know, no, 2 weeks ago, the Mavericks are everything about the anti-Cowboys because they show up in the playoffs. And now all of a sudden they lose, they get going to be swept. Now Luka's Dak. I mean, that's just the nature of our world now. It is crazy.
I refuse to indulge in it.
But
I've been around pro sports enough, and so have you.
It's hard not to ignore because you got the Windhorst stuff and you got Kendrick Perkins. They're ripping Luka, so you can't ignore it. You know, you don't have to ignore it.
No, you don't have to ignore it, but you can stay in your lane and you can deliver your truth as you see it, and you don't have to get caught up in the other thing. Because it's okay to criticize Luka and say, Doug, you are the best player on the court. You can't pick up four fouls in a five-minute period in the fourth quarter. You just can't do it. And at least two of those fouls were just outright dumb and stupid. They were stupid fouls. You can't do that as being the best player because now you've hurt your team in the worst way possible. That's a fair criticism. That's okay. And that ain't got nothing to do with calling him a loser. That's just you made a dumb play on the court. And I think too many cats get caught up in these personal attacks
You're talking about ESPN employees. You're talking about them guys. Well, that's their job to do that stupid shit like that. That's their job to make them takes like that, to be loud and right and all of that stuff. It's almost, you know, they selling tickets. You know, that's what they do. And I don't listen to them. None of them.
No, but a whole lot of people do.
I know they do, but I'm just saying, it's just, that's what, that's their job. That's why it don't surprise me what they're doing. It's like Clarence said, it's the world we live in. You know, whether you choose to partake or not, that's what they're doing. I mean, Brian.
No, I get that.
Brian don't look like he ever hit a jump in his life. I don't know. I don't know if it mattered, but I'm just saying.
See, that falls he's
never been jumping in his life. He never ran around the block in his life. You ever seen a fool, you know, but.
There you go.
But, you know, that matters not. You don't have to.
Right, I was going to say, that's the same thing. That ain't got nothing to do with nothing.
Got a lot to do with nothing.
You don't have to make a jump to criticize somebody who can't make a jump. I mean, that's just what it is. You don't have to be president to criticize the president. And the job he's doing, that's what we do. You don't have to be a movie maker to criticize the movies you look at.
Okay. You got
it. It's true. You don't.
Yeah. According to y'all, that's fine. I ain't mad at you.
I know you're a former player and everything else, and don't nobody know the game like you, but I'm just, you don't have to play the game to criticize obvious stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill Belichick didn't play. He's going to do all right.
That's Bill.
Part of sales, okay. Party, a whole lot.
They didn't play pro ball.
Yeah, we know.
Okay, they played.
Mike McDaniel probably played as much as I played. Okay.
Okay, they didn't play pro ball,
but he probably played as much ball as I played.
Okay, you played ball though.
Yeah, I'm just saying, Mike McDaniels, you know, but he studied the game. Whatever. But the bottom line is this: it doesn't matter. There's no reason to. We're all saying Wins Worse is out of order, but that doesn't do it because he didn't play basketball growing up. How about that?
If you criticize somebody, you should have some idea of what the hell they're going through.
He's criticizing effort. He's criticizing on-court demeanor. He's criticizing, and he's covered the game. He's been around winners. He's covered LeBron. You know, he has an experience in this arena. I know oftentimes, you're just like me and Jock. I've been in the locker room. I know what winners look like. I know what that stuff looks like. You can criticize. That's all fair game. To criticize how you're acting, how you're behaving, you know, and your character, all that stuff. That's what he's talking about. He ain't talking about his jump shot. He ain't talking about his defensive rotations. He's talking about him being a turnstile on defense, not helping out. He's talking about on-court demeanor, not being there for his teammates. He's talking about him playing about the refs and being a liability and screaming at the bench and stuff like that. That's what he's talking about, though. It's not an X's and O's issue. It's not a scheme thing.
Yeah, the thing about it is he's going to get eviscerated. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he takes it because he could take it. And try to improve it over the next couple of years. Because I was struck by when I was, and I heard one horse thing. I was like, wow, okay. And then I was struck by a column I wrote in 2007 after the 67-15 Mavericks lost to Golden State and Dirk went down meekly in the last game. And I was like, you know, the Mavericks will never win a championship with Dirk as their best player. And I went on for, you know, 700 words of why that would occur. And then 4 years later, they won a title. And everybody wants to send me that column. Oh, see, you didn't know what you were talking about. Now, you know, as soon as I wrote it, it was pats on the back. And, oh, this is a great column. It needs to be written. But that's because players can change. Circumstances can change. And things can change depending on who you are and how badly you want things to change and what you do to put things in motion so that the outcome is different when you next get an opportunity. And Luka Doncic will have several opportunities, seasons to win a championship, and it'll be how he decides internally, because only he can change, you know, whether any of the criticism he gets is valid or whether it's invalid.
Oh, no doubt. You know, and I think that, you know, it's funny you bring up Dirk, you bring up that run, and he still won that title without any other, without a number two, without no other all-stars. It was still Dirk and the Miracles, Dirk and a bunch of dudes that took out the Lakers and took down all these other teams with these two and three headed monsters. And, you know, certainly you beat the big three in their first, you know, down in Miami to win the title. It's basically Dirk and a bunch of dudes. I mean, Dirk and the Mavericks don't get enough credit for the run they had in 2011 against the competition. They sweeping the Lakers and Kobe and those guys. They don't get enough credit for the run they had, Dirk and a bunch of guys who won that title. But, yeah, I mean, things happen. You know, there was a question about Dirk's toughness. There was a question, after that, it's funny, that Golden State series, he won the MVP that year, right. And then they go out and do what they did against Golden State. But let's be honest, they should have won 06, but the referees were favoring your boy down in Miami. He got all the calls in 06. But that's how it happens. You have to go through these moments. What people understand, the NBA, you just don't show up and win, and you have to go through some stuff to win. And the Celtics have gone through some stuff. This Celtics squad has been here, and they suffered. They lost last year to Miami. They've suffered. And they've been close for a couple of years, and so it's their time. They finally got over this Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown combo, and they're finally getting over the hump and getting it right. But yeah, you have to go through something. You just don't come. And Lucas had a great start to his career, 4 straight or 5 straight, first team All NBA. But it ain't that simple. It ain't never been that simple for nobody. Going back to Jordan, it's just you have to. It's growing pains. Caitlin Clark, you just can't walk in here and think they're gonna hand you a title. Caitlin Clark, you got to go through some stuff, and you come out the other side. It only cements your status and your legend and your legacy.
Well, I was going to say, they've been to the Eastern Conference Finals. We're getting to that, man. Golly. 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
They've been to the Eastern Conference Finals 6 times in the last 8 years.
Right. They've been here.
And they've been each of the last 3 years to the Conference Finals. And then this is their second trip to the NBA Finals in the last 3 years. So they've been banging on the door for a minute. And they're just now kicking it in. And so it will be very sweet, rewarding for them, whether they win it in 4 or whether they win it in 5 or whenever they pop the top on them champagne bottles and cigars. It'll be a sweet moment for them because they will have had to persevere and get there. They're better than I thought they were. And even more important, the matchup, the way they play, like I said, it just exposes all of the Mavericks' flaws that they were able to hide in the first 3 series that they played in the playoffs. As we move to Caitlin Clark, I'm sorry, you had one more thing to say about the Mavericks?
I'm good. I just know that, I've showed up and showed out at every Mavericks trip to the finals, since 06. I've never seen the Cowboys go to the finals championship game.
So you live vicariously through the Mavericks. Caitlin Clark, what is your Caitlin Clark take? Should she have been on the Olympic team?
No, she shouldn't have been on the Olympic team. It's like she's not one of the best 12. There's no question about that, and she's not one. I know she's popular, but the job is to win. The job is to put the best team out there to win. They're going to win anyway, regardless. You don't make those assumptions. That's how you get arrogant and stupid. That's how you get upset, making those assumptions.
Team ended up losing.
Yeah, that's how the men's team ended up losing. It don't matter who we put out there, you don't send your best. These teams are getting tougher and better every year. It's a global game. You can't say we just give a roster spot away to Caitlin Clark, because she's popular. You put the best 12 out there, and she's not one of the best 12. There's no question about that. Well, she's the 8th leading scorer, and she's doing as a rookie. As I always say, you steal this from again. Beware of the best player on a bad team. They got 3 wins. Just because you're the best player on a bad team
3 weeks ago.
And you score a lot don't mean you're good, as we've seen with Bill in Philadelphia, in Phoenix, you best feel on a bad team don't mean you that guy, okay? Somebody got to lead the score on a bad team. And so she still has liabilities on defense, Luka. She can't keep up with certain people. She doesn't have a mid-range game. You know, she's not ready. She don't have time to grow. She needs to rest after a long college season, after long two college seasons.
Yep.
And she should have a chance to be on the Olympic teams going forward, you know. She just not on this team. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. And, you know, I kicked up some dust on Twitter, you know, with a couple of things on the X. I said, you know, it's funny. All these people who are against affirmative action and DEI want Caitlin Clark to be a DEI hire or a DEI appointment to the Olympic team. You know what they say about DEI? Didn't earn it. Well, she ain't earned it. She's not earned it. So, you know, what'll make you laugh, you make you cry, we always say, you know. She didn't earn it, and she should not be on the Olympic team. And it's funny because I also equated, you know, people, you're wrong, it's a bad comparison. Sha'Carri Richardson for the 2021 Olympics, you know, because she got killed in 2020. She got disqualified in the 100.
Right.
She was eligible to run the relay.
Nobody.
She was our best. Yeah. She was our best and most popular sprinter.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if we'd beat Jamaica anyway, but if you had any chance of beating Jamaica that 4x1, it was with Sha'Carri Richardson, as we saw in the Worlds last year. Okay? If we had any chance of beating them with Sha'Carri Richardson, they did not place her on the team.
Yep.
And nobody would sit up here, up and know I was crying, put Sha'Carri on the team, put on. Now, I wonder why we weren't doing that.
Because she's black. You know? She's a sprinter.
I
thought it was. Well, nobody gave up their spot. Nobody said, yeah, I'll run on this relay.
No,
you can take
no,
my spot.
No, they don't get, people do it all the time. Everybody don't want every round. You put the best four out there for the finals, okay? Yeah. There's six spots. There's four, and there's people in the relay pool, okay? You got the four.
Well, and I anybody understand can run, all any, that. I'm just saying, nobody wants to step aside.
You don't have to give
aside,
up no spot.
Then.
But my point is, they didn't have to. The USA track and field picks the six sprinters
take
that go
spot.
Every the team.
Right.
Ain't nobody got to give up a spot.
Right.
The USA track and field decides the six is the first. It's the four finalists who win in the 100. And then they pick two other people. So they could have picked her as one or two other people.
I viewed it as a. I also viewed it as people forgot or people didn't take into account that it is a team, and there's no evidence we've seen that based on what we've seen, she's going to be playing a lot of minutes or she's going to be a key contributor on this team. She'd be more like a role player. You get in where you fit in, blase, blase. And so as we've seen on other instances like that, like there was a time where Colin Kaepernick could have played in the NFL or Tim Tebow could have played and teams didn't want him even in a camp or a practice situation. Why? Your presence creates a distraction that's bigger than what you're worth. And I think they may have looked at it as well as, okay, if she don't play, now these players got to come to the podium, and instead of asking how come you won and how'd you play this, they got to ask, the players have to answer questions about, well, how come Caitlin didn't do this and how come Caitlin didn't do that? And none of that creates what you want, the atmosphere that you want on the team. And so I think given the fact that she wasn't going to be one of the best players on the team, and there was a lot of questions about whether she had earned a spot on the team, you don't want to subject the other players to that, and you don't even want to subject Caitlin to that, having to defend herself the whole time she there.
Yeah, she would get limited minutes. The 12th player on the Olympic team don't get no time. They don't get no time. They get no minutes.
She get some blowout time. Now, the question would be, there are some players who have been out for injury, and it'll be interesting to see if she gets it on there, if they can or can't play. But, you know, even the wings point guard from Notre Dame, Arike Ogunleye, she's the leading scorer in the WNBA, I think. She's not on the team. Ain't nobody crying for her.
No.
And she's the leading scorer in the WNBA. And we know what she can do in terms of, you need a bucket? Oh, she can go get you a bucket. Nah, you know, she can get to the hole. She a natural scorer. Shooting percentage is not great, but if you need a bucket, she can create the space, she can take the shot, she can get where she's trying to go. And that is a skill that can come in handy. And so, you know, I think people in general because they're not really into women's basketball. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you I've been studying women's basketball because I ain't. But they ain't got but 12 teams or 14 teams. The teams that they got are stacked. They're talented. I mean, as we said, imagine the NBA with only 12 teams. Think about how good the teams would be.
Yeah, and you that's know, like that's one thing NBA. I always say, that the number former number one pick from Texas was a number overall pick of the Wings 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
And she couldn't play worth a lick.
She didn't last 1 year. She's overseas. She didn't last 1 year. You know, yeah. And she was one, number one overall pick. It is tough to make the WNBA. It is, these are the best women in the world. They're grown women. They're tough. You know, there's natural growing pains. A lot of rookie first round picks don't even make teams. You know, and certainly this is a strong rookie class with Andrew Reese and Brink and everybody else. They're playing well, but you know, to think that they're just going to come into the WNBA and dominate, to think that they're going to let them come in and dominate, it's funny to me. Because people just forget history. I mean, people don't remember Jordan rookie year when Isaiah Thomas them tried to freeze him at the All-Star game. This rookie getting all this time. People forget how, and which is so crazy to me, the Chicago Tribune would write an editorial about comparing the hit that Carter put on Reese to assault. When you watch Jordan get murdered by the Detroit Pistons for years,
Scottie Pippen no one, too.
Yeah, but it's got to be people too, and no one compared it to assault. No one said this is wrong, but we're, you know, I don't know why we're babying Caitlin Clark. That every anytime somebody tells me, I watched the game the other night. I watched the Aces the other night against Minnesota. They play a physical brand of basketball. You know, you and the refs don't call a lot of stuff. Those girls, and the thing about it is, what people are saying, because they're below the rim, it's going to be physical. They don't get up high. Okay, everything's going to be a fight below the rim. It's a physical brand of basketball, you know, and that's part of it. Kayla got to grow into her body, get her weight up, you know, get in better condition, and she'll be fine. And just like Jordan, when you're special and you go to these wars, you go through that, that only adds to your legacy, adds to what you've done, adds to the respect you get. So let her accept this growing pain to grow. And if she's who we think she is, it's going to make her even greater.
Yeah. She's going to get some rest, man.
But it's going to make her even greater.
Yeah, off-season, man.
When she adjusts, but she got to develop a mid-range. She can't just be all threes because she's not physical enough to finish at the goal like she did in college. And so she got to get a mid-range. She got to get a couple floaters in the lane and stuff like that to go with a three-point shooter.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think she'll spend the offseason working on that, and then we'll see. But I think both of y'all are right in terms of she just played them two long college seasons because he went to the championship game the year before, then get no rest after the offseason right into the WNBA season. And so this is more basketball than she's probably ever played in calendar year at this highest level and with all the stress of trying to prove that you're worth the money and prove that you're worth the endorsements and prove that you're worth all the things that that people say you are. And so I'm sure she just, after the season, she just want to go collapse somewhere for a week before she start training. All right, man. We appreciate you. Before we let you go,
I talk more to Cowboys, man. You know, don't be dismissing me, man. I mean, I talk more to Cowboys.
Yeah, man. We done gave you the whole show today. Me. We finna ask you about fatherhood and Father's Day and you know what you got planned and how you deal with the emotions of your dad being gone recently, yet being father to three kids and all the internal consternation that all that must provide.
You know, it's funny because I really haven't taken stock.
And
so
it's okay
far.
To cry here on Shock Talk.
I don't cry. That's probably one of my problems. But you know, I'm pretty much emotional.
That's why I said
but,
that.
But I haven't really taken stock with all that thing. Let's kind of go by day. Certainly, my daughter's here, and daughter in D.C., and my son's in Austin, and they're all doing well. Certainly, my father's not here, and I miss him. You know, but it's funny because you know everything I do. You know, I don't know how to cut off work. You know, I'm at the game. And so I did my little story on the Mavs, and I see Kyrie's dad. I said, man, call Kyrie's dad. You know, I want to do a Father's Day story on you. You know, Kyrie just gave you the shoe. You know, playing the shoe after you. And you know, what he's gone through and you know, how he's, you know, getting his roses again. How you feel about what's going on with this Father's Day? He's holding his grandbaby. And he said, I really want a story about me. I want to do a story about me. You know, it's not about me anymore. But I'm glad you're talking about the Father's. We don't get talked about. And let me give you a number. I might change my mind. I'll give you a call. But that's, you know, so we'll see. So we'll see. But yeah, so we just chapped it up as Father's. Man, I'm fine. I know that, man. People don't appreciate Father's and what they're doing. It's one he talked about. You know,
one of the things I always go ahead.
Yeah, you know, so those are things I think about. And like I said, I don't really take. I mean, I just appreciate my kids. I put some on Facebook. I just shared a thing on Facebook. You know, as a goal, my father, I want my kids to be better, more successful, and go further in life than I did. And that's my blessing. That's my thanks. You know, and that's what I want.
Yep, that's always the goal. Always the goal, for sure.
What is it you miss most about your dad?
You know, just being here. You know, you don't appreciate things until they're gone. I mean, you try to appreciate them, but you just, you know, you don't appreciate it all. You know, and it's funny because me and my sister get jealous. Like I said, he was lived to 96, and you know, my dad died at 86. And it's, man, why couldn't my dad live that long? Why couldn't he do this? And you know, we like both mom and dad. We see other people's family and parents live longer, and you know, and I try to tell us, you know, they lived a great life, and you know, we can't think about those things, but then it comes up every now and then. You wish they were still here, still around, or bounce some things off of, just to really appreciate them, you know, in this point, like, cause you used to get so busy. I mean, you know, with your own kids and your own life and your own job, and my dad had been working since he was 14 years old. You know, he's always worked, and he just worked and worked and worked. He retired from 40 years and the school teacher and became a full-time, you know, businessman, accountant, the HR guy for a funeral home. He did, you know, taxes on the side. He worked in a church and worked in a fraternity. He was always, always on the go until they had a stroke at 83, you know. And so it's just, you know, and so you just don't get a chance to take stock in everything. And so you just, you know, so I work a lot. You know, I don't turn it off. I try to have my stolen moments with myself and my kids. But I'm always on the clock, so to speak. And I know I got that from my dad. I'm always on the go, always running, being involved in different organizations and doing things like that. But, you know, just the last few years I did get, you know, as he was aging and dealing with some health issues, you know, I just spent a lot of time around him and just take it and try to appreciate him and show him some love.
No, I mean, I think that's good. And I think that's I think that's something that all of us who are naturally hard workers have to do. But I think you have to be intentional about it. I've been intentional about different things in my life. At a certain point, and I did this in Dirk, I'm shifting it, but it's the same thing. Dirk's last year or two, I was like, you know what? I've been watching one of the greatest NBA players of all time. And I've been covering him, but I ain't really been watching him. I ain't really been enjoying him. And I was like, you know what? Even though I'm covering him here, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to really enjoy and savor these last moments Dirk is playing blase. And so I really tried to appreciate his greatness.
Did you just speak Dak DeParcher into existence right there?
Hey, maybe so, because I don't mind watching greatness. I mean, we got to see it with the triplets
up close and personal.
I did the same thing with my dad, which is just, you know, make sure that even though he lives in New York and I live here, that two or three times a year, we go hang out. However it is that we go hang out, whether it's his birthday or Father's Day or just forget it. I got some hours. I work for myself. Where you going to be? Let's meet up somewhere. You know, just so that you can have some of those moments and enjoy them and, you know, just kind of be intentional about it because we all get caught up in our own stuff that you can, you know, you can let the you can let your other stuff slide and be like, damn, where did the years go? Now, some people do it with their kids and never figure it out.
Yeah. Well, one thing I recommend, I really kick myself, you know, before my dad and mother had their 50th wedding anniversary, I sat down and did an interview with them about their love story.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
And so as your dad is living and still lucid, interview him, get him on video about his life, about your history, your family history and stuff like that, so you can pass it on.
Check this out.
I didn't do that with my mom and dad. I'm really kicking myself.
Yeah, I felt that way about my grandparents, you know, and I wanted them to tell their story. And you know what? By the time I thought about that, they was gone. I agree with that 100%.
If you have a chance,
let me tell y'all the funniest stuff ever, but it's real, like you just talking. But it's a great idea because I'm going out of town with my son and my brother and my dad. We all meeting up this weekend for Father's Day, and we're going to do that this Father's Day. Now that you mention it, he gave me a little bit of that on a trip to Memphis about 6 or 7 years ago, and mm-hmm. We actually went to Nashville and drove through his old neighborhood, and he was talking about this is where I grew up, and actually got that on video, and so that was good. But man, my grandmother, and I was real tight with my grandmother. She used to tell me, her and my aunt used to tell me, when you get done with these cowboys, you have got to write our story. And now this is my grandmother telling me this. She goes, because my mother was a numbers runner and ran a whorehouse. and ran a gambling operation. And she said, hey, it is what it is. The stories we could tell you about growing up and how all this worked out and how my grandmother had the police on the payroll and all this other stuff. Well, it was her mother. She said, that needs to be recorded. You need to write that. Yeah. We'll get around to it. And now
He already got mad at me about his grandma. This man used to live with her.
You know, I'm gonna kick your ass. You say that because it's not true.
Hey man.
And they both in glory, and they're probably still doing the same thing. I would tell you if I thought it was something different, but it's not.
I'm missing something, man.
Yeah, you're missing something, it's so vile and negative. I'm not gonna bring it up.
You trying to be private about something?
Yeah.
The man who reveals everything about everybody. You trying to be private?
You think I revealed everything about everybody until I tell you something? You go, I didn't know that.
I don't reveal everything about everybody. So I like this man, you know, this woman, this man lived with his grandmother for years, and he going to claim it was just fake.
I think he unplugging shit, you know, over what, there man? Or something. I don't know what
he did. I'm about to drive
out to Euless right now.
And whoop somebody's ass.
That's what I'm about to do. Put him in a headlock.
You better go do some push-ups or something, dog.
And Joe and Nate tell us grandma never had a whole house.
We're talking about two different women.
Okay.
I'm sorry, man.
Are we still on? Are we still live?
Is this thing still on?
Yeah, we're still live.
I mean, great. Hey, did you?
That was my mother's mother.
Well,
I'm not the woman you talking about was my mother's father's mother.
That's a lot of mothers.
Did you ever write those stories? I just want to know. Did you ever?
And I'm finna call you a mother in a minute. I got all the stories straight. And on that note,
I think he's trying to kick you up out of here, man.
We'll see your ass next week.
I think you know who I talk
about. I'm in tears over here, man.
Well, it's about time you cried about something. Yeah. Take your ass home.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'll see you at the party tonight. I may or may not speak to you.
Oh, my God. Bye, man.
Bye. Hang up on this man.
I'm trying. I can't reach the phone.
We went an hour, man. I took an hour out of my day, man. I need that last.
Yeah. You go. That's Clancy Hill Jr.
That's what we do over here.
Brought to you each and every Friday by Smokey John's Barbecue, 1820.
Nah, he hung up on us.
It's about time. Yeah. That man off the line. 1820 West Mockingbird, causing trouble as per usual. You won't find any trouble, Smokey John's Barbecue. Where the food is to live for. It's the home of the Jam Session Bowl. And what the Jam Session Bowl is, it was named after my previous show, Jam Session, which I used to do with Matt McLaren. And it's a bowl with mac and cheese base or mashed potato base. Your choice, 2 out of 5 smoked meats. I usually rock with the sausage and the brisket. And then all that stuff you find on loaded baked potato. Bacon bits, chives, butter, cheese, sour cream, all the good stuff, man. They put it on top. And then they drizzle it with sauce or they drench it with sauce. Either way, it's fantastic. Easily enough for 2 folks to eat. If you got a little shorty, 6 or 7, like my grandson, who's a slim 9, 3 of y'all can eat off of it. No problemo at all. But you got to get over there and try it. It's fantastic. If you need Smokey John's in your life sooner than that, you can go to the Marketplace. They're running a special right now. You can click on the Marketplace, SmokeyJohns.com, hit the rub or the sauce, get them sent both to your crib, $15, have it in a couple days. If you need it in your life immediately, like I got to have some Smokey John's today and I can't get over there to 1820 West Mockingbird, check this out. You can go to HEB all over Dallas, Fort Worth. They got the rub in the shelves, on the shelves at HEB. And coming soon to Trader Joe's little store, Smokey John's banana pudding is coming to your storefronts. Like, you could walk in the store and buy it. Can I tell y'all something? Smokey John's banana pudding, which I've had twice in my life, it is love in your mouth. Fantastic! Smokey John's, my man, Brent Reeves, my other guy, Juan Reeves, they are doing it at the highest level. Go support them. They're good people doing good food. Smokey John's Barbecue. Food to live for. Clarence Hill took all the show today. We appreciate that. You got any final thoughts for the people, Joe?
Nah, I'm good.
Let me tell y'all something. I sent Joe this long list of notes and topics we're going to talk about this morning. And at the first thing was chill. And an hour later, we ain't got to none of them topics, although we covered some of them talking to him. But, you know, he can do that sometime. So this is what happened when it's our show. We kind of do what we want to. And today we had a good time talking with Clancy Hill Jr., the Star Telegram, about all things Dallas-Fort Worth sports. Yeah. And I even thought I was going to get him to cry for a minute. You know, he got to understand it's okay for men to cry. Even cute dogs time to time.
Trying to get him to cry on the show, that ain't no good.
Man. I mean, I wouldn't really try to get him to cry, but, you know.
But my take on the marriage, I'm telling my take on the marriage. The marriage adjusted to what Boston was doing. They did all the right stuff. They adjusted. But then, guess what? In walked Jason Tatum, the real Jason Tatum. And wasn't no adjustment for that.
Nah, they was just going to show up in one game.
They was just better. They was just better. And you spend all your energy chasing. All your energy chasing people. That wear you out over a series when you got to chase them every game.
Yeah, especially every game. But I'll tell you this about the series real quick. It's 93-92. Kyrie has just hit a 17-foot jumper. And you're thinking, oh, my God. Are they going to do this? Why? And then what happens? Boston comes down. You get what you wanted. You get what you wanted. Jason Tatum contested at the rim, misses the shot. And then Tim Hardaway Jr., who should have been down there to grab the rebound, fell down. That created a perfect lane for Jaylen Brown to scoop right in there, without anybody putting a body on him. Get the rebound, put it back up, and it's a 95-92 lead. You bring the ball up, you go, no problem. Let's see if we get a 3-2, it's on. And then P.J. Washington picks up one of the dumbest fouls outside of Lucas that you'll ever see. And here's why it's dumb. You're in the backcourt walking the ball up with 3 minutes left in a three-point game. Whether you moved or you didn't move, there's no reason to put yourself in a position where the ref can call the foul. You can't put yourself in a position where he might go, ah, move the screen. Whee! So you just can't do that, or you get the ref pulling his whistle out, calling you for the foul, ball game over. Mavericks had 26 seconds where they didn't play, where they had two mistakes. Boston took advantage of them, 98-92 lead, ball game over. You may have noticed we've been having some dead spots. That's because from time to time this equipment acts up. And that, my friends, is why we could use some additional sponsorships. And we're looking for sponsors right now. If you got a small business like Smokey John's Barbecue, which is thriving, and some other sponsors we've had over the years, we'd love to see if there's a fit. And here's why. One of the best things about this show is we got a loyal audience. We got an audience that believes in what we do, and we got an audience that listens to us. And when we say, hey, here's a company, whether it's Freeway Tire, whether it's Greening Law, whether it's Smokey John's Barbecue, whether it's Blue Star Motor, that's worked with us in the past, the reason why they work with us is when we tell y'all, hey, here's the people we rock with, here's the people we ride with. If you need their services, give them a call. They'll take care of you. They do, and you come back with, oh, my God, the service was great. Everything you said about them was great. Well, we're looking for more of that. We try to do some big things here on Jock Talk, whether it's with the podcast, with Big Joe and the Big Rig, or what we're doing with Jock Talk One-on-One, our series of interviews with Cowboys past and present. And we need some different equipment. We need some things and we need the sponsorship to do what we're trying to get done, whether that's better cameras and better lighting, better computers, so we can bring to you the stuff that y'all say you love and that we love giving to you. So if you're interested in some sponsorship of Jock Talk, all you got to do is send an email, jock@jjtmediagroup.com, and we'll get back to you and see if we can find a good fit for me and a good fit for you. So with that, we appreciate it. Now, one other thing I need from y'all. Stop what you're doing. Right now, go to YouTube, click on The Real Jock Talk, and subscribe to the show. We're trying to get up to 1,000 subscribers, because once you get to 1,000 subscribers, it opens up some stuff where you can do some more and we can make some cool adjustments and do some extra things with the YouTube channel that we can't do right now. So we need your help doing that. You can follow the show at The Real Jock Talk on IG. You can follow me on Twitter or X at JJT Journalist. If you think you follow me, you don't. My account's been hijacked, held for ransom, and I refuse to pay. It's just that simple. They can kiss my behind. And then you can always follow me in Clapper. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor is the handle. And I bring you a lot of videos with HSOs over there. A lot of Mavericks talk lately. Now, we appreciate you so very much for listening to the show and participating. And being fans of Jacques Talk, and my boy Big Joe the Big Rig, who's fast becoming a celebrity. Now, you can't be asking him for pictures and autographs all the time like you do with me. I mean, you can, but just beware. I mean, you know, my disposition and his disposition look different.
What are you talking about?
I'm trying to bring him out so that he don't mind taking pictures and signing autographs like I do.
Yeah.
But everything's a work in progress. Everybody get to their own point in time.
That whole little diatribe was bullshit, but all right.
That's why I love this
guy. I am a people person. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm a people person.
Okay. Yeah. You heard it from him. He's a people person. You see Big Joe the Big Rig out in the streets, eating dinner with his lovely wife at Rodeo Goat, just stop him, ask for your picture right there, mid-spoonful, get your autograph signed, he got you. Now, until we chat again, before he can say anything else, y'all be blessed.